A city is stronger together. So let's hear from the business and community leaders that keep Milwaukee on the upswing. Presented by Horicon Bank, the natural choice for all your banking needs. Now here's the host that's always on the upswing, WTMJ's Jeff Sherman.
Now, to business, gentlemen.
Welcome to the Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. As always, a big thank you to the community-minded people at Horicon Bank. This week on the show, we're going to connect the dots between big forces and some street-level reality right here in downtown Milwaukee. Milwaukee Alderman Bob Bauman joins us to talk about the new 10 p.m. food truck ordinance in downtown Milwaukee. We'll talk about the future of the Milwaukee streetcar, the Hop, and what he sees as Milwaukee's biggest challenge and biggest opportunity as he moves into maybe the final 2 years of his term, but I'm guessing he's probably going to run again. You know, it is morning still. Maybe you're on your first, second cup of coffee, but I'm always up for another cup of coffee, and we like to look into the prices for your coffee in greater Milwaukee, a little thing we call the Upswing Coffee Index.
Time for a quick look at your coffee and how much it costs. It's the Upswing's Coffee Index. Coffee
Index. Little coffee talk for you. I got a lot of Starbucks news I want to tell you about. Locally, we're still only, if you will, maybe only in quotes there, $2.65 for a 12-ounce coffee. Now, I fully admit I'm probably one of the only people still drinking straight-up coffee these days. So here's some additional prices at Starbucks. The Mango Strawberry Energy Refresher. Everyone's pushing the refresher drinks now. 16-ounce. It's only 130 calories. Clocks in at $5.75. But if you're going to go for the cold brew, the pistachio cream cold brew, 16 ounces, has a little of that salted brown buttery topping on it, little two pumps of vanilla. Any guesses? $5.45. So you're getting over that $5 mark if you're going to go to the refresher or the cold brew. And I'm guessing part of the reason why for those costs is you look at Starbucks' recent earnings, the world's largest coffee chain, of course, reported just this last week a 6.2% increase in global same-store sales for the second quarter. In 2024, here's maybe a reason why, they kind of quietly hired one of the most powerful marketers in America. Now, she's not a celebrity, but she's been connecting with celebrities since she began. Tressie Lieberman, she's the architect behind all of Starbucks' celebrity mashups. And maybe if you're not on TikTok or Threads or Facebook every day, you don't know about this. But a big part of what's driving some of Starbucks' success now is their celebrity mashups. Mr. Beast, Taylor Swift, all these digital era stars have really won back the younger customers and have rebuilt the community and some of the slower sales that Starbucks was dealing with a couple of years ago. So they're not relying only on like Starbucks in every corner anymore, right? The team is putting together creators. They did this Mr. Beast cannonball drink, integrated into the Beast games with Mr. Beast, a big sponsorship, viral videos. It all worked together to create this playbook that's really working for Starbucks on TikTok and on YouTube and other fandom social circles. The experience is really theirs, and Starbucks has done a really cool job. I applaud them. Another couple coffee items I want to go into here. I saw this on NBC News, and you may have even heard about it in other outlets. But coffee drinkers from around the country have filed a lawsuit against Trader Joe's. And this is really interesting. Trader Joe's has this store blend that they call French Roast Low Acid. And tests on the coffee, according to some of the plaintiffs in the lawsuit, have showed that the coffee contains half the caffeine as regular coffee. So they're citing, this just isn't fair. You look at other competitive brands that say low acid, they have higher levels of caffeine. So the lawsuit claims the customers have been misled by Trader Joe's. Low acid doesn't mean low caffeine. I don't know. It's it's interesting. You got to complain about something, I guess. But calling it false and deceptive advertising that forms a pattern of unlawful and unfair business practices that harm the public seems a little too much for me. Trader Joe's hasn't really commented on this. But I guess buyer beware when you're reading any label, because it's not always what the product says. Now, finally, you want something on the caffeine side that you can know and trust? I'm going to stick local. Have you heard of Control Freak? Control Freak is this independent brand that Milwaukee's Stone Creek Coffee offers. It's a standalone line. Intentional energy of this line is caffeine control with no gimmicks. Really cool packaging. They do a 0%. If you just want the vibes, you know, fully decaf, they do a 25%. For lightly buzzed, they do a 50% for a little bit more balanced approach. They do a 75%, a little more controlled chaos, they called it. And then they do the 100% full throttle. Control Freak coffee, that way you're getting it how the label says exactly with the percentages. Trust the local guys. They're going to bring it to you. Also, trust latest research that says decaf coffee, same amount of benefits that caffeinated coffee has. So I say go for the next cup. And next time you see me at a local coffee shop, buy me a cup. I'll get you the next time. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Let's dig in, if you will, a little bit to the nighttime economy. The new 10 p.m. food truck rule here in downtown Milwaukee. How we balance safety and transit with nightlife and small business. We're going to explore some of the big opportunities and maybe some of the big challenges for the city of Milwaukee. And there's no one better to do this than Milwaukee Alderman Bob Bauman from the 4th District, representing greater downtown Milwaukee. Bob, I appreciate you taking time out of your day
morning,
to be
Jeff.
With us.
Glad to be here.
Of course, of course. So let me just level set here, give some overview on the food truck ordinance. But new ordinance passed by the entire council, signed by the mayor, prohibits food trucks from operating in the downtown neighborhood past 10 p.m. It's a measure that's meant to cut down on loitering and some crime on weekend nights, especially in the bar district along North Water Street. There's some other big picture measures that are being considered that I want to have you talk about too. But first, if you can, kind of take us to like a typical Friday night on Water Street or in downtown. What were you seeing and hearing that led you to propose this ordinance?
Well, basically, we took our lead from MPD.
Okay.
They've been urging a curfew for many years. We did adopt a 1 a.m. curfew at their suggestion about 2 years ago, and they came back to us and indicated that that really wasn't working as well as they wanted it to. And what they testify they see is they see that the food trucks tend to be loitering. They tend to attract a lot of loitering by individuals who are not even legal drinking age. So it's the loitering, the hanging around, which often leads to public drinking, which is illegal, and confrontations. And then as we had about a month ago, gunfire and a homicide and two other individuals shot. And that's not the first time that's happened. There's been gunfire incidents over the years, especially in the Water Street district, especially since the pandemic. This is really a last four or five year type of phenomenon.
Okay.
And the main problem is the underage individuals who cannot patronize the bars. Right. They're just hanging out on the street. It's like a big block party or tailgate party. And MPD testifies that there's a direct causation between the presence of the food trucks and this loitering and lingering and hanging around. And so we responded. They wanted us to lower the curfew from the 1 a.m. to 10 a.m. And we had a public hearing on the subject. MPD testified. MSOE testified that they were very much in support. You know, they have about an 8-10-acre campus right adjacent to the Water Street Entertainment District, including a residence hall on the corner of – on the northeast – southeast corner of Juneau and Water Street.
Okay.
About 300 students live there. MSOE has experienced a lot of property damage as a result of the nighttime activities, broken windows, oftentimes shot out from – gunfire incidents. And so they had concerns. Bid 21, the Downtown Business Improvement District, which represents pretty much all the major property owners and employers in downtown also very much in support. Mm-hmm. So relying on that input and that urging, you know, the council acted. We decided to give MPD the tools that they were asking for to mitigate the problem.
So what 10 p.m., you know, some, was there specific data around that time? Some of the owners, the food truck owners say 10 p.m. is a little early. Did he consider 11? Did he consider midnight?
We did consider 11, but those stakeholders pushed us to go to 10.
Okay.
We did. I would have been happy with 11, but they pushed us to a 10 p.m. curfew.
Okay. Yeah, because I mean, you were hearing from some of the food truck owners publicly saying, you know, they felt maybe a little blindsided and they weren't consulted. What do you think success looks like 6 months, 12 months down the road? Are you going to get pushback from the food truck owners to say, hey, you're hurting our business?
That's, well, yes. I've no doubt they will take an economic hit that I think they can ultimately recover from by adjusting their business plan, adjusting their locations, adjusting their work patterns. I mean, but as a practical matter, the economic vitality of downtown Milwaukee is a huge priority of the council, the mayor, because downtown is the economic engine of Milwaukee. It's the economic engine of Southeast Wisconsin.
Yeah.
I mean, we have about 139,000 daily residents and employees and visitors in downtown. Yeah. There's 79,000 employees downtown. There's 34,000 residents downtown. And the visitor numbers are off the charts. I mean, total visitors last year was 34 million people in the downtown area, with the largest destination being Fiserv Forum at 1.2 million. Yeah. So Fiserv Forum is right on the edge of these entertainment districts, as are many of the other major traffic generators. The Avenue here is the third largest traffic generator in downtown. Number two is the public market.
We're talking with downtown alderman Bob Bauman. So, Bob, let's continue to zoom out on that downtown vibrancy. I mean, you look at, in terms of downtown, generate 21%, I believe,
yes,
if my number's correct, 21% of this total tax base in the city, despite only having, what, a fraction of the area,
3% of the land area, yes.
So it's a very concentrated core.
Absolutely.
That contributes 7 times more property tax revenue per square mile than the city average. But are there other tools then that you're going to look at?
Yes,
to
absolutely
enhance security and make sure this vibrancy continues?
Yes.
Other than just, oh, food trucks, you can't
MPD
remain open until 1 a.m.
The police department and the Department of Public Works have already worked out a plan to curtail scooter usage during certain hours on weekends.
Okay.
In a sort of a staged approach that comes in, that kicks in at various dates. One level of restriction comes in on May 1st. Another level of restriction comes in on June 1st. They have other protocols in place to do sort of emergency downtown-wide shutdowns. Mm. And the beauty of that is, since there's only one scooter company left, they have the technology to implement shutdown zones or no-ride zones with the flick of a switch electronically by geofencing. So that is another tool because, again, police indicate that scooters are an easy way to get around downtown to do positive things and to do negative things.
Yeah.
And the police report that scooters are sometimes used in connection with some of these gatherings and some of the fights and some of the feuds that continue from the neighborhoods and then get expressed and manifest downtown. We're also looking at we also approved a file yesterday at the committee level to have Department of Public Works, MPD, and the Office and the Department of Community Wellness and Safety to put together a potential plan for security perimeters around entertainment districts, basically a fenced-off, cordoned-off area.
Hmm.
Just a plan at this point to see what it would look like, to basically have further public discussions on whether it's a good idea, bad idea, whether it would do more harm than good, what type of fencing, what the security zone would be, who will operate it, who will man it, who will pay for it, who will put the fencing up, who will take the fencing down.
Right. A lot of
it's a fairly big understanding, undertaking. So we wanted, there's been talk about fencing for a long time, for several years now. And it's come up in various meetings of neighborhood groups, of business improvement district meetings, discussions with MPD. And, you know, everybody basically comes to us and says, we got to do something.
Right.
And then the answer is, what something? Well, a perimeter is one option. But again, nobody has any details. Nobody can envision what that would be, right, how it would work. So we wanted to get something on paper that people could react to, discuss in further public settings, whether it be again the Business Improvement District, Downtown Neighborhood Association, committee hearings, and then decide who's going to pay for it, which will be a big issue.
Right.
And then at some point, perhaps pull the trigger and implement it. But again, I'm not even sure I support a perimeter fence at this point,
right,
but I thought it would be in the interest of everyone to at least lay out a plan of what it could look like and how it would operate.
A tool in the toolkit. Is there a risk that maybe we're looking to solve for safety while unintentionally then kind of diluting the entertainment experience, especially for young people and visitors, right?
Of course.
You've got to manage that.
But what we hear, again, from stakeholders in the community is the worst way to kill the entertainment experience is bodies laying on the street as a result of gun violence. Because that news of that spreads like wildfire. The media covers it extensively. And we cannot allow a reputation, a perception to take hold that downtown is unsafe and dangerous after a certain time, whether it's 10 p.m., whether it's 11 p.m., whatever the case may be. That would kill the nighttime economy. That would do significant damage to bars and restaurants, to music venues, to entertainment venues, to Fiserv Forum, to the Avenue, to the public market. If a perception takes hold that downtown is unsafe, a lot of folks from outside the city and outside of downtown may choose not to come downtown, not spend their money, not do the restaurant, or just come down and do the ticketed activity and then go right home instead of lingering past 9:30 or 10 o'clock or 10:30 at night. That would do serious damage and have enormous economic consequences.
All right. When we come back, Bob, I want to pivot a little bit from some of the challenges in downtown Milwaukee. The flip side, some of the biggest opportunities that you see in the city of Milwaukee, and talk about the future of the Common Council and the relationships there. And then, for sure, I want to take a ride on the hop and get your thoughts on the future of that system right here in downtown Milwaukee. This is The Upswing. You're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined in studio by Milwaukee Alderman Bob Bauman, who represents the greater downtown area. Bob, you are the longest tenured current council member.
Yes.
At City Hall. What do you see moving forward? Not only your tenure, but for the future of the city is the biggest opportunity. The mayor's calling it the year of housing. Is housing the biggest opportunity for Milwaukee, or do you have additional thoughts?
Well, I can speak about housing at great length, but I don't. But that really wouldn't be focusing on downtown so much as the neighborhoods. A lot of challenges to accomplish what he proposes to accomplish. A lot of neighborhoods in Milwaukee do not have the market conditions to support market rate housing development.
Okay.
So almost everything requires a subsidy of some sort, whether it's low income tax credits, whether it's tax incremental financing from the city, block grant. I mean, that is the challenge. The market is generally weak in most parts of the city so it cannot support market rate housing. Downtown, on the other hand, is a place people want to live, is a place where people want to come down and pursue entertainment and restaurants and bars and music venues. And so downtown is an attractive place, and it has great amenities. The amenities have dramatically improved over the years and have grown over the years. The tax base is expanding. We have a lot of projects approved, ready to be built, many of which are currently being held up because of interest rates and the cost of construction, especially the market rate projects that generally tend to be higher level, higher income type of projects. We're putting a lot of tax incremental financing into workforce housing projects. There are several of those that have already been approved for downtown, including the water in Wisconsin, the building in the northwest corner, which is going to be 334 units.
With about the 100 East building.
100 East, exactly. That's going to be converted to apartments. That project is approved. And I think their demolition will be starting in a matter of weeks or months. We're looking at a major development on the site of the Performing Arts Center parking garage, which is on land owned by the city. The garage is owned by the PAC, mm-hmm. but the land is owned by the city, and the city has put out an RFP for redevelopment of that site, okay. and that could be a very big site. That's a two-acre site. It's huge. Okay. So there's a lot of demand for housing downtown, both workforce housing as well as market-rate, higher-income housing. You know, the 333 building was built. That's leasing up. The Couture mm-hmm. is completed. That's leasing up. You know, they got a new bar going into the Couture, which is an operation from Chicago that looks very exciting. Mm-hmm. The restaurant in the 333 building is getting rave reviews. So, I mean, downtown is looking good, in yeah. my judgment.
Yeah.
And it's
then how do you spread that success from your district across the entire city?
Well, that is a challenge. yeah. And I don't know, frankly, I don't know. I have the answers for yeah. how you do that. Presumably gradually. Mm-hmm. And you grow out from the center. You know, the northeast of downtown are already solid, desirable neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. I mean, the reality is that Milwaukee is pretty much split into three zones. You have what we call the prosperity zones, which are basically the areas, the neighborhoods that are along the lake from the very northeast side to Bayview. Good quality of life, walkable mm-hmm. neighborhoods, excellent housing stock for the most part. Demand, high demand for living. The market is the housing market's alive and well in those neighborhoods, whether it's Bayview, the Upper East Side, even Walker's Point mm-hmm. is developing very rapidly. Downtown, of course, Third Ward, of course. And then you have what we call the legacy neighborhoods, which are the neighborhoods on the far southwest side, northwest side, and far south side of the city, which tend to have housing stock typically built after World War II. Some of those neighborhoods are great. They offer tremendous opportunities for starter homes, for first-time home buyers. They're relatively small properties. And they're, again, the property values there have been generally stable, and those tend to be very pretty safe areas as well. And then, unfortunately, the rest of the city is more or less a poverty zone. Mm-hmm. And that's a challenge. It's a combination of household income and folks' ability to afford to buy and maintain a home. The city, over my objection, is tearing down vast amounts of existing housing stock, which I think would have better been served by rehabilitation or at least deconstructing them to avoid the cost of landfilling, the demolition debris. But that's another issue. So we're tearing down a lot of, you know, the year of the housing is an ironic thing because we're actually tearing down more houses than we're building. We're
talking with downtown alderman Bob Bauman. So, Bob, when you look at the internal dynamics of the Common Council, how do you work together? Is there a collaboration there to kind of spread some of the success of downtown to all the neighborhoods?
Interesting you mention that. And that is another one of the reasons that I would say push the timing of this curfew, food truck curfew, is because an increasing number of aldermen from outlying districts are raising concerns about the so-called Code Red program, which is the police department's directed mission to deal with the downtown entertainment districts. Mm-hmm. And Code Red, it's not red like in Russia or something. Right. Red stands for... it's an acronym.
Yeah, yeah.
Responsible Entertainment Districts.
Okay.
Responsible Entertainment Districts. That's the RED. And it involves a force of officers all on overtime, so they're not being diverted from their normal patrol duties, spending time downtown, 30 to 40 mm-hmm. to 50 a night, especially Friday and Saturdays. And some of the other alders are complaining that this drains police resources from their neighborhood districts, that their residents have to wait longer for calls to be responded to, that there's less proactive policing going on. And when I start hearing that there's concern about downtown being overprotected, being the recipient of too many city resources at the expense of neighborhoods, then we have to look for non-police personnel remedies.
Yeah.
And perhaps things like food trucks, eliminating scooters, and especially the perimeter fencing might eliminate the need for that number of officers to be present.
Take some of the burden off of the costs from the police department side.
Exactly correct.
Yeah.
And because, again, not all my colleagues recognize the relevance of the city representing 21% of the city's tax base.
Yeah.
I mean, that's that's a big number. Yeah. And what that means is that downtown economic activity is funding the budget of the entire city.
Yeah. When we come back, Bob, you're closely associated with the Milwaukee Streetcar, the HOP, from the beginning. A lot of people ask, what's the future of the streetcar in terms of possible expansions? I want to dive into that when we come back. This is The Upswing. Right. You're listening to WTMJ. Well, welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined in studio by Milwaukee Alderman Bob Bauman. Bob, I want to talk transit and connections with you next. You, from the very beginning, have been an advocate of the Milwaukee streetcar and public transportation as a whole. I always say, especially when it comes to the HOP, it is about discovery, it's about density, it's about development, and truly about diversity. Diversity of transit options for all Milwaukeeans. When you look at the future of the streetcar, We expanded to the Couture and the L line, which gives it great potential to get to Summerfest and the lakefront, which it does. Now, what are you looking at from possible extensions? You've said, you know, they're dead in the water until further funding comes. What would it actually take to expand to the neighborhoods? Is it funding? Is it political will? Is it private partners? Is it all the above?
Well, that could be all the above. You're absolutely right about all the above. I mean, we have had a plan for expansion really from the beginning. And it was always anticipated that the streetcar needed to be expanded to become truly useful because it stops short right now of many of the major traffic generators in downtown. It's the end of the line is now the intermodal station at St. Paul and Vail Phillips Avenue. But some of the major traffic generators are just north of that up Vail Phillips Avenue. That it doesn't reach here, where we're presently sitting in the Avenue, Fiserv Forum, the Wisconsin Center District, the auditorium, the arena, all those venues. So yes, the immediate goal is to absolutely expand up Vail Phillips Avenue to at least Highland, so that you're touching all those major traffic generators, and then I think you have the ability to really offload some vehicle traffic onto the streetcar because people can park in other parts of downtown where the parking cost is either free or much lower and then use the streetcar to access a lot of those venues, many of which are very close to one another. And when they're both active, it's really congested.
Yeah. A lot of cities have that park one concept, and then you're able to use a variety of different public transit options to get to where you want.
And then we had the ambition of further expansion, the Bronzeville expansion, which would continue that line on Vail Phillips Avenue north to Juneau or McKinley, which would then transition over to King Drive and then proceed north on King Drive to North Avenue. So you would tie in the Bronzeville neighborhood, the new arts complex being built there, and the Thrivent, which is a very dynamic location. And then going south, the plan was to depart the current line at St. Paul and Milwaukee, run south on Milwaukee, cross the Milwaukee River, and then run into Walker's Point. The exact route for that has not exactly been nailed down, but there's any number of routes which could be used. First Street, Second Street, over the Fifth Street, Sixth Street, and then south on those streets to as far south as you want to go. The initial goal would have been National Avenue. And that represents, if all of that were built out, you'd have about a 5.5-mile system. And now you're talking real transit service and real utility because you're tying a lot of neighborhoods together that have natural synergies already. The first phase of that would most logically be the Vail Phillips Avenue extension, which is surprisingly expensive because there's a lot of utilities that would need to be dealt with. But we are shut down at this point based on Act 12, which was the legislation passed 2 years ago that enabled the city to levy a sales tax of 2%. And that legislation had a lot of poison pills in it, actions by the legislature to really impede the city's ability to determine our own fate. It mandated certain staffing levels for police and fire, which is very expensive. It mandated MPS to put resource officers, police officers, back into schools, which MPS had made a conscious decision to take out of schools several years earlier. So really thwarting the democratic process. You know, there was an elected school board in Milwaukee, and they voted to remove the officers. Yet some in the state legislature thought they knew better and mandated the return of officers to the schools. And then the question of who funds them, and they're partially funded by MPS. And again, MPS, as everyone knows, has its own set of financial challenges. And they weren't even at the table negotiating Act 12, which is the most bizarre thing of all. It's just like reaching out and saying, oh, by the way, you too, we're gonna make you do something.
So what will it take
and
to
the other
take
poison
the next
pill,
step?
The other poison pill was they specifically prohibited the city from using tax incremental financing to pay the local share of streetcar expansion.
Yeah.
And typically, those types of projects are funded with 80% federal money, 20% local money. The local share, historically, in the past, has been raised using tax incremental financing, not property tax levy dollars, but incremental financing. And the legislator, that Act 12 specifically barred the city from using that tool. Yeah. So that did shut us down.
All right.
And it was very sad because during the Biden administration, there was a lot of interest in expanding transit. There was a lot of money appropriated by Congress for transit capital projects. So the resources would have been there at the federal level were we able to raise the local share. Now, there's other ways to raise the local share. There's private partners, perhaps.
Right.
You know, the obvious one is the Bucks. You know, here's an organization that owns an asset, the franchise, which we're told is quadrupled in value over the 10 years that they've owned it. It's now worth several billion dollars when the original purchase price was, what, $500 million or something in that range. It would improve the value of their franchise, in my judgment. It would improve the value of ICER Forum because of, it would add connectivity. And they could easily be a contributor if they sold.
So you're going to need a collaborative approach in order to take that next step, whether it's a private partner and government funding and federal funding.
So
that's the only way it happens.
We are the political will part is the legislature has to flip, and then a lot of Act 12 may be modified or repealed.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, elections matter. Elections are important because it changes directions.
Well, speaking of elections, as I mentioned, you're the longest current tenured council member, first elected in 2004, reelected five times. How do you think about your own through line and like unfinished work? How long do you want to stick around in office?
Well, the streetcar is certainly an unfinished work. I mean, that is definitely something I would want to see, at least on the road to expansion, if not fully complete, because those projects take time. And to build out that full system that I described, the 5.5 mile, 6 mile system, I mean, that's probably a 10-year project to fully build it out.
So when you look back,
so that is clearly a project, and yes, I want to see the continued development of the city, both downtown and the neighborhoods that I represent on the west side, which also have challenges, but also opportunities in terms of housing stock, in terms of their proximity to downtown, their proximity to freeway access, their proximity to public transit. You know, the Near West Side has a lot of assets, and they have a great collaboration with the Near West Side partners who do excellent work on the West Side. And I live on the West Side, so I have a personal interest in seeing that through as well. So, yeah, I you know, as long as the voters want
me
back,
it's sounding
I'm
like you're going to run for another term then.
Yes.
All right. So when you look back at your time, and maybe even look into the future, what do you hope people say Alderman Bob Baumann stood for?
He was a champion of transit, of improved public transit, expanded public transit. He was a champion of improved housing stock in the city, preservation of housing stock in the city, and was a champion of safety and security throughout the city.
Very good. Bob, I really appreciate your time and your insights into how the city works and all that's happening here in downtown Milwaukee. I always say downtown Milwaukee is the economic and entertainment engine of the entire state, but in order for the entire state to run, our heart, which is downtown Milwaukee, has to be strong, and it helps the entire state grow. This is The Upswing. You're listening to WTMJ. Well, welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Finally, April showers, of course, mean May flowers. I get it, but truly, like, May is the one month I'm not going to lie, May is the one month where I'd really consider moving away from Wisconsin. It's always just never as nice as you want it to be. We've tasted some of the warmth from April, and you've seen people on patios, and the windows are cracked a little bit, and you have that kind of hopeful first run on the lakefront, and I don't know, then May rolls in, and you're like, hold on, come on. It's 48 and raining, but anyway, I want it to be sunny and 75, and that time is going to come very soon. There is this ray of sunshine, though, that I need to tell you about. I need to mention Zach Galifianakis. You know who he is? Comedian, funny guy. New show on Netflix, and it's a gardening show. Exactly, that's the name. This is a gardening show. Now, I'm not a gardener. I can barely keep a house plant alive, but I love this show. Galifianakis basically wanders into this world of gardening with this really fun mix of curiosity, kind of self-aware goofiness, learning alongside you instead of pretending to be this expert in gardening. It's really short, like crystallized, tight episodes. They're like 15 to 20 minutes. I think the one I watched last night was 16 minutes. And somehow it's like part comedy, it's part calm, and it's just this reminder that we all need to slow down a little bit and we need to touch ground and just realize, like, all right, let's grow our food and let's get back to the basics. And summer's coming, farmers market's right around the corner. So in a month where, at least I say, that weather can, I don't know, just never be as good as I want it to be, this is the perfect show. It's about growing things. It's hosted by a guy that kind of looks like he's lost between two ferns, right? Maybe three ferns, I don't know. But he decided to be on this show to create community around something we all love, growth and gardening. So May, maybe it has you grumbling a little bit. It's never as warm as you want it to be. Cue up This Is Gardening Show and let Zach bring the weather that maybe the Wisconsin weather won't bring you. Lighten up a bit. You're going to love this show. You're also going to learn a ton. I've been watching it with my kids. There's all this data and information on where tomatoes came from, where apples came from. So it's educational. It is funny. It's insightful. It's community. And that's what I appreciate. It's on Netflix. Check it out. See you next week.